Time now for Green Visions, a KUMD production to encourage green thinking and green actions. Green Visions is made possible by the family-owned Duluth Grill. Glenn Delugice joins us on the phone this morning, and he is the Moose Project Leader with the Minnesota DNR. Glenn, thanks so much for joining us this morning. As far as I'm concerned, we can never talk too much about moose.
Yeah, nice to be with you, Lisa.
So tell me a little bit about the moose population in our part of the world here in northeastern Minnesota. Numbers, good, bad, what's going on?
Well, we conducted our annual survey up in northeastern Minnesota for moose that we do every January, typically in January. And the population seems to be holding steady still. Since 2012, after a very steep decline from 2009 to 2012, it's now been holding fairly steady around 4,000 moose. Statistically, it's not really changed since 2012. This year's estimate was 3,030, but there's uncertainty, of course, associated with every year's estimate. They are just estimates over a very large area. But statistically, they're hovering right around 4,000, which is a good thing. It's not, you know, we would love to be able to say that the moose population seems to be increasing again and recovering, but that's not the case right now. But at least it's remaining stable at this level.
Are we far enough along that we have some insights into what caused that decline? And what were the numbers, what was the moose population before 2009?
Yeah, the peak that we had was in 2006, and that estimate was 8,840. Again, just an estimate with confidence intervals, but that, you know, that was our peak estimate. And yeah, we have a very good idea of the various factors that are important to contributing or causing this decline. It's, you know, two-thirds of the mortality, a very aggressive study over the last 4 to 5 years of adult survival and cause specific mortality, GPS collaring lots of moose, adult moose, found that two-thirds of the mortality is being caused by health-related issues like what people have heard of as brain worm or P. tenuis is a major factor. Periodic or intermittent winter tick infestations is another one, where moose can become infested with thousands of ticks during a winter, and you know, so bad that they're always itching and biting and scratching and losing a lot of hair and spending so much time itching and scratching and biting that they're not eating, so they become severely undernourished. Now that doesn't happen to that severity every year, but when it does happen, like it did in 2013, we can see particularly low survival of adults. You know, that can contribute to the drop in the population pretty significantly.
I know that when you look at companion animals, and I don't know a lot about wild animals, but I know with companion animals, when you get a tick infestation or a flea infestation on an infant or a young animal, that they can take such a toll on that young animal that the young animal doesn't survive. Do you have any data at all about whether perhaps the tick infestation is contributing to, I don't know if they call it infant mortality when we're talking about moose, but if it's affecting moose calves?
Well, yeah, it does affect moose calves. And in fact, I have observed calves in their first winter that are so badly infested with winter ticks that they are completely hairless. Now we see, and that's in winter, so you know they're dealing with the cold and all that. They come into winter with not a whole lot of fat because they are calves, and then you know they lose some or all of their hair. That certainly does happen. That's not the most common thing, but it happens during a bad winter tick season. And we know, like, we did a 7-year study of winter tick infestation and moose nutritional status and population dynamics on Isle Royale from the late 80s to the mid-1990s. And it was very clear that winter ticks in that study, especially during the two worst winters, drove that population down by about 26%. They were a major factor. But once that winter tick infestation subsided, the population recovered to a new historic high, and nutrition improved significantly. So here we know it's a factor, but it's an intermittent factor. It's not a big factor every year. Wolf predation is the other major factor for adult wolves. They account for about a third of the adult mortality, often compensatory mortality, where the animals are dying of other health-related issues, and the wolves just get them before they tip over from those health-related issues. But they do account for about a third of the mortality of the adults. Now, the wolves have a bigger impact on calves, on calf survival through their first year, which is very important to recruitment, what we call recruitment into the population. And it's that recruitment that's so calf production and survival to 1 year of age is very important to population performance and whether that population is going to grow or decrease. And wolves, during our intense study over the last 4 years, have accounted consistently for about two-thirds of the mortality of those that occurs in those calves. Predation, wolves and bears account for 84% of the total mortality, but wolves are accounting for most of that. So, you know, wolves can have a big impact on the population. There's no doubt about that.
One of the things, again, that I guess people wonder when their own when most or much of their experience is with their own animals at home is, okay, brainworm. Don't you suppose there'd be a medication for that? But in addition to the cost of developing something like that, I would imagine that wildlife management needs to be careful in how much you start fooling around with things and how much you start interfering. When you see tick infestations killing adult moose and calves, I would imagine that there's something in you that says, oh, man, you know, we need to do something to get the ticks off these animals. What's the thinking as a scientist looking at this situation, kind of part of you, the human part of you, maybe wanting to interfere, wanting to help, and the other part going, I don't know if that's a good idea. What's the process like?
Yeah, I mean, you always have to be careful about that and consider the balance of those things that you just spoke of. And, you know, really, though, I mean, the thing about thinking about, what you're suggesting, treating something like that with domestic animals versus wild animals is it's a difference in perception of scale between of some of the public and the wildlife managers and biologists, because we're dealing with millions of acres, animals spread over or distributed over millions of acres at not very high densities, mind you. So, that, you know, it's not possible to spray anti-tick and flea, you know, from a plane like a crop duster. People have suggested that. But, you know, we're talking about millions of acres, not a couple of hundred acres or a backyard or a local hunting area. This is a huge area with, you know, even though we have 4,000 moose estimated, you know, that's over a very large area. So the actual occurrence or density of moose over the landscape is very small. So, you know, it's that scale. It's, you know, managing, doing research and managing animals, especially very large mobile animals at a very vast or high scale, large scale. That's a difference between how do you confront issues and problems like this once you discover what the important mortality factors are. How do you go after that? How do you treat that or manage for that to turn the population around? Some of it is just natural phenomena, and you have to kind of consider that, you know, before you interfere too much. But, you know, in wanting to all of us want to try to turn this moose population around and get it on the increase, you know, we do consider all sorts of management activities to do that, whether it's manipulating the forest, you know, different cover types to improve habitat, whether it's burning, you know, prescribed burning and those sorts of things, wolf reduction, which we can't do because the state doesn't have management jurisdiction, but I mean all sorts of things. Or, you know, managing deer at lower densities in moose range, which we do because deer are a very important part of the brainworm cycle. Before they get into moose, they go through deer, then they get into gastropods or snails and slugs, as many people know them, and then they get into moose. And they're not fatal to deer for the most part, but they are fatal to moose, the brainworm.
Well, so, I understand. It's fascinating to talk about this because, of course, you know, people who are interested in such things, we do. It's available to us. We watch, you know, nature documentaries.
Sure.
And so we wonder about all these things. Now, the deer, I know where the deer are. They're in my yard.
Yeah.
And there, it's like, okay, if you decided that you were going to medicate deer for this somehow, it would seem to me that that would be fairly easy to do because there's a real, what did you call it before, a perception of scale, and you talked about not high densities of moose.
Yeah, a difference in perception of scale,
There's a whole bunch of density of moose
and you know,
in
Lisa,
our neighborhoods.
So you think of your backyard, you know, very small scale.
Right.
Could we treat the animals in your backyard? To a degree, you know, the deer in your backyard.
Oh, absolutely.
To a degree, but those deer move out seasonally and disperse themselves over our very vast landscape. So would treating the deer in your backyard have an effect on the regional population? Negligible.
Probably.
Negligible.
No, it's fascinating to learn about some of these concerns. And then when you think about, you know, obviously you would need the right medication to treat moose.
Yeah, and maybe repeated applications.
And then it's, well, who's going to develop, you know, this medication for moose brainworms when there's a limited market for that sort of thing?
Yeah. I mean, that's certainly an issue as well. But, you know, really it's, I think the most important part is it even feasible if you had the right chemical or treatment? Would it be feasible with, you know, that moose density over that vast of a landscape? You know, could you do that, or would it be cost prohibitive?
Well, the only way to do it,
it would be.
The only way to do it is, the only way to do it would be to get a reality TV nature show to come in and film the thing, because then they'd pay for it. But, you know, in terms of the taxpayers, you know, how much are, you know, we want to vaccinate 4,000 moose. You guys want to pick up the tab? Yeah, I can see where that might be a kind of a hard sell. Glenn, thank you so very much for joining us this morning. What a treat. And I hope we have the opportunity to talk again soon.
Oh, you're welcome. It was nice to be with you.
Thanks again, Glenn.
Take care. Yeah. Bye.
Glenn Deljudice joined us this morning. He is the Moose Project Leader with the Minnesota DNR. Green Visions on KUMD is made possible in part by the family-owned Duluth Grill, offering organic, homemade, and fair trade menu items, and Heritage Window and Door, the Twin Ports supplier for Renewal by Anderson Windows and Doors.